Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Samach Amud Bet. Simanei Of Lo Nemru. So we had in the Mishnah that the Simanei Of are never explicitly enumerated in the Torah. The Torah only enumerates the birds that are not Ksherim. Aside from that, it also enumerates two birds that we know are Ksherim, and that is because Korbanot come from the Torim Ubnei Yonah. So we know two birds that are Kasher. And then besides that, we have the enumeration, that huge list of birds that are Tmeim, which we're going to discuss today. So now the Gemara is going to make a comment, and then we'll, through that, figure out what the exact definition of these items are. Below, is that really true? V'atanyo. Don't we have a bright nesher, which is one of the birds that is problematic, that is tamei. Ma nesher, miyuchat. What are the features of the nesher that are unique? Shein lo etzba yetera. So these are the simanim that we've spoken about. V'zefek. It doesn't have a crop. Vein kurkabano niklach. And its gizzard is not peeled out. Vidores ve'ochel. And it is a bird of prey. Tamei. And that is enumerated by the Torah as being tamei. Af koyagayotsebo. Anything similar to that bird that has those features, tamei. And then in the inverse, torim. So torim we know for sure are ksherim because they're allowed to be brought in the mizbeach. Torim ubnei yonah. Other birds that are permitted to go on the mizbeach. Yeshlem etzba yetera. They do have these features. They have an etzba yetera, vizefek, and it has a crop, vikurkoban niklaf, and its gizzard is able to be peeled out, ve'ein dorsim ve'ochlim, and they don't eat like birds of prey, tehorim, avkogiyotzven tehorim. So too, anything similar to them will be tehorim. So obviously you have a problem here which we'll have to resolve in a minute. You have here the nesher, which gives you four items that make you tamei. And they have the Torah that gives you the same four items that are tahorim. So then, which is it? Do you need to have all four to be tahor? Or do you need not to have all four in order to be tamei? It doesn't address what's in between. We have here the two extremes, or the contrast between the nesher and the Torah, and that gives you these four items. But it doesn't necessarily clue you into as how many of these do you need in order for it to be a bird that is tahor. So now, taking a step back, first of all, the nesher is a bird that is commonly identified as an eagle, and even in the Rishonim, they bring the word eagle as well, but it's pretty clear that it is not an eagle, and that is a misnaming of the nesher. The nesher in the Torah and here in the Gemara is a reference to either the griffin vulture or the great vulture. It's otherwise known as an ayit today in the modern Hebrew. And that's the bird that we're speaking about for a number of reasons, including the problem of these four different things, which the eagle isn't necessarily missing all of these items, therefore creates a problem. That's in terms of the identity of the nesher. In terms of the identity of the torim, we spoke about that towards the end of Menachot, when we spoke about the korbanot there, as to what the torim are, probably a turtle dove. And again, we have versions or species of them in Eretz Yisrael, but not likely the ones that the Gemara is referring to today, the common birds that are around, but something along those lines that traverse here, that travel through here on a regular basis. Because this is a huge migration path for all the birds, from Africa to Europe. They come through Israel in the spring and in the fall. So many birds that come through here that are not necessarily indigenous to the area pass through here at least twice a year. All right, so now the next thing I wanted to address is, what exactly are these simanim? Because they are subject to a decent amount of controversy, surprisingly, given the fact that they should be pretty straightforward. The first of which is etzba yetera, so the extra finger-like projection. Rashi on the Mishnah says that the etzba yetera, zu etzba gvoa, shachore etzbo. It's that higher up finger-like projection that is higher up on the leg. As the Ramban already notes, and other Rishonim point out, there are two possibilities as to what Rashi is referencing to when you say etzba yetera, that is higher up. It could be that etzba yetera, that is over here on the back of the foot of any bird, meaning that they have an etzba that goes backwards, that sits behind, it is slightly raised above the other fingers, but it goes backwards. In addition, there is another finger-like projection that comes out the back of the leg, like on a chicken, which is a finger-like item that extends out of the back of the leg itself. That's a second possibility as to the explanation of Rashi. Again, either something that sits behind the three fingers at the bottom, slightly raised, or something that's in the middle of the leg that sticks out backwards. The problem with both of those explanations is, they are, first of all, found in many non-kosher birds. That's number one. And number two is that some of the kosher birds don't have those features. So that really runs you into a problem as to identifying which is the Etzva Yetera, because it doesn't work in either direction. It's not helping us on the Tameh side. It's not helping us on the Tahor side. So the Ra'ah, on the other hand, and the Ran express a different view that the Etzva Yetera is really in the front three fingers. It is the middle finger is longer than the other two fingers. That's what it means, Etzva Yetera. Doesn't mean in terms of an extra finger, but an extra long finger that's there. So it's the extended finger in the front. So that third finger, that middle finger, is longer than the other two fingers. Again, that doesn't work perfectly. It's a little better than the other explanations, but not perfectly, because we find some Tameh birds that also have that feature. So one other opinion that is broad is the possibility that the Etzva Yetera is a description of that middle finger again, but that middle finger is longer than the lower leg of the bird. It's true in pigeons, it's true in torim and bnei yona, in doves, that their middle finger is actually longer than the lower part of their leg. And so that would be actually a fourth explanation that tries to overcome all the other problems, and it does a better job than most. But again, amongst the Rishonim, you have these four different opinions as to what Etzva Yetera is. Rashi saying the back etzva. The Ramban saying that that one that is up on the leg is clearly not it. He rejects that as being the explanation of Rashi. The finger in the back, which is slightly raised, again, which some of the other Rishonim pick up and say that Rashi meant that. But again, it's not foolproof. Then you have the Ran and the Ra'ah, who say it's the middle finger is longer. And then there's a fourth opinion, I can't remember who brings that, but a fourth opinion that the middle finger is longer than the lower leg of the bird. That's the, as terms of the first of the, simanim. The next one of the simanim is the zefek, is the crop. That kosher birds have a crop. The problem here again is that many non-kosher birds, including the eagle, have a crop. And so then how could that be a defining factor if many of the non-kosher birds also have a zefek? And again, we're going to see in the Gemara in a second that certain birds only have certain of these features. And again, trying to match them up, you'll see that the crop shows up in many of these birds. So to that, there are two views within the Rishonim how to deal with that. And that is that the crop in the kosher birds is a deep sack. Instead of it being a shallow sack, it's a very deep sack. That's one way to explain how birds that do have a zefek, it's still not classified as a halachic zefek, as a halachic crop, because it's just not deep. The other way that they deal with it is more from a status of function, which is that the zefek in the kosher birds has the food sit in there, and then it's mixed with enzymes and other things that help with the digestion of the zraim, of the materials that the kosher birds eat, which are generally not meat, which are mostly seeds and vegetation. And so those items, the crop soaks and starts the process of digestion to help it to, once it goes through the gizzard, to get swallowed up. That's not true in the non-kosher birds. The purpose in the crop in the non-kosher birds is just if the stomach, the gizzard is full, it just stores the food and waits to go. So instead of being something that has functionally is a part of the digestive process, it's simply a storage pouch versus a digestive pouch. And that would be a distinction in the crop to help you distinguish even birds that do have a zefek. Nevertheless, their zefek functions differently and is shaped differently than those of the kosher birds. That's the way many of the Rishonim deal with it. It happens to be that Sichat Cholim points out that none of the waterfowl that are kasherim, that means both the avaz and the barvaz, geese and ducks, do not have a zefek. They do not have a crop. And despite that, they are still kasherim, based on the fact that you don't need to have all your features to be kosher, as we're going to see in the Gemara later on. But that's just a note here to know that the waterfowl only have three out of the four features that make them tehorim. Although the Balamor on the riff over here on this perek mentions the fact that he has a mesorah from his forefathers, from the Geonim, that any bird that has webbed feet or has a beak that is very flat, by definition, is not doreis. And that's because if you have webbed feet or attached fingers, you don't have the ability to grasp or do any of the drisah that we're about to describe. And similarly, if you have a straight and flat beak, you don't have that curved and sharp beak that allows you to peck away or rip away at the animal to be doreis. And for that reason, these waterfowl are kasherim, because they by definition are not doreis. because of the fact that they have webbed feet and flat beaks. The last of them is Akukurano Niklaf, that the gizzard that peels off internally. You can see that over here. You can see a picture of it. There's a sac inside the kurkuban that pulls out. It's not this clear white sac, the film that's on the outer layer, which doesn't peel off easily. There's an internal sac that peels out of the kurkuban, and that's the reference in the kosher birds. The truth is that non-kosher birds also have a kurkuban, but again here, the shape is different. In the birds that are eating meat in general, the gizzard is very flat and narrow, because the gizzard actually has two parts. So it has a flat and narrow part and a deep-seated part that's more muscular. So the birds that are birds of prey who eat basar generally have a gizzard that's very flat, and then the birds that are eating zraim and other things have a deeper, pouchier type of gizzard. And so that's a distinction that also drawn between them. But the kurkubano niklaf is generally unique to the kosher birds, and so that's another feature. So those are the three features. The last question you have to ask is the dores v'ochel. What does dores v'ochel mean, number one? And then how impactful is dores v'ochel? Is it similar to the other features, or is it like a super feature, which means that it's an automatic disqualification, and you don't even have to look at the other features? What's the relationship to the other features in dores v'ochel? Rashi on the Mishnah says that dores v'ochel says ocheiz v'tzipor nav, it holds it with its fingers or its nails, umagbiyam in a karka mashochel, and it lifts up from the ground what it eats. Now that could be one of two ways, because when see Rashi coming up gives a different explanation to what dores and ochel is. It could be in concert with that explanation, or it could be different. Let's assume that it's different for right now, which means literally that it raises the food off the ground in order to eat it. So over here we have Tosfa quoting Rashi from the Mishnah, and he's saying that they raise the food off the ground with their fingers. Rabbeinu Tam is a little bit bothered by this. Chickens do that. They pick up their food a little bit. They raise it from the ground with their fingers. So why is that a siman tuma dores tameh? So Rabbeinu Tam gives an alternate explanation, although Rashi himself, in tomorrow's daf, gives another explanation for dores v'ochel, and that is v'nirli shekol of shenotein raglo ala ochel. Any bird that places its feet on the food, kshu ochlo, when it's eating, umachziko v'raglo shlo yanud, and it keeps it on its foot so it won't move. So let me tell kulo, oitzopiv hudrisa. So it rips pieces off of it while it holds it in place. So if the bird is sitting on the food, he holds the food in place and then rips it with its mouth so he doesn't take the whole thing in at once, that's called dores. Rashi gave the explanation that you hold it with its legs and eats it. Now holds it with the legs and eats it can either be literally that it picks it up towards its mouth and eats it. That the Rabbeinu Tam is bothered by because we find kosher birds that do that. In addition, it's also possible that Rashi meant the pavish that he brings in tomorrow's daf. And that is that what it means is ocheiz b'tzir banav and eats it means that he holds it down with his feet or its nails. And then on top of that, it pulls or eats at it. So they could be synonymous or they could actually be different explanations. Many of the Rishonim see these two explanations of Rashi as being different and not synonymous. And therefore, we have now two possible explanations according to Rashi. One is that it lifts the food up. The second of which is that it holds the food in place and tears away at it. The Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like either of those explanations, and therefore he brings a third explanation on today's daf, and that is the following. Finish Rabbeinu Tam, dores v'ochel michayim. Dores v'ochel means it eats the prey while it's still alive. Einu mamtila ad shetamut. It doesn't wait until it is dead. Meaning it attacks the prey, and then it's already subdued the prey enough that it can't get away, and then it starts to rip away at the animal while it's still alive. And that's called dores v'ochel. So that's the Rabbeinu Tam's view as to what dores v'ochel is. So here you have three different explanations as to what dores v'ochel is. And even though some of the kosher birds eat, for instance, worms or things like that, they don't tear them apart. Whatever they eat whole, and so therefore it's not dores v'ochel. The majority of their diet is zraim. But if for some reason they eat something that is not a zera, nevertheless, they are not dores v'ochel. They don't do any of these things that Rashi mentions, except according to Rabbeinu Tam, lift up their food. But besides that, they don't tear their food apart. They don't hold it down and tear it, and they don't eat it while it's alive, or rip it apart while it's alive. Whatever they eat whole. The Ramban does bring an additional view, which is just the simplest view, that drisa means that the animal kills and captures its prey with its claws. And that is the nature of dorsim, which is a sentiment that's echoed in many of the Rishonim. The only thing you have to reconcile is the fact that Gemara before seemed to indicate that ofot or dorsim don't have zihara. They don't have this venomous ability to kill their prey, especially that it's bigger than them. What you'll have to say is it's not through their venom or their zihara that they're killing. It's literally through their claws that they're killing, even though some of the Rishonim even include the word zihara over here. Then, beyond that, there's a samachay and without there's a braita that says the following, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, kol sheishlo etzpe yetera v'zefek v'kubrano niklaf. If it has all three of those features, v'yadua shu tor, then you know that it is a tahor bird. It skips dores. So Rashi over there says, da'resh samich. The Tani, that's relying on the ratio of that braita, which says, kol of dores tameh, that any oaf that is dores, it's a super feature, that any bird that is dores is automatically out. Birds of prey are automatically disqualified. Bim eino dores tor. And if it's not dores, it's tor. Va'at lemeimar Rav Gamliel. Bim eino dores, v'yesh lo od shlosha siminim, v'yadu shu tor. So Rashi says, if you're dores, you're disqualified automatically. If you're not dores, you need the other three simanei tara in order to be kasher. That's how Rashi reads the braita. So Rashi reads dores as being a feature, an automatic disqualifier. If you're dores, then you're out. If you're not dores, then you need the other three simanim in order to be tahor. So it means that you need all four simanim in order to be tahor, just that dores automatically disqualifies you. And that's what's being said in the braita over there. And Tosafot says over here, v'in l'shona braita mashmakein. Says the braita doesn't sound like that. Umfaresh, Rabbeinu Tam. So again here, the Rabbeinu Tam argues and says, kemen sheishlo gimel simanim alalu sheltara b'yadua sheino dores. The Rabbeinu Tam says there's an equal balance. How do you know a bird is not dores? If it has the other three simanei tara. So if you have the other three features, then you're not dores. Or if you're dores, you're not going to have the other three features. Meaning that there are two different ways to check a bird and to see if it's kasher. If you have the other three features that are kasher, you don't need to check the drisa feature. You know that the bird is not dores. That's what Rabbi Gamliel is saying. Or vice versa. If the bird is not dores, it's going to have these three features in it. So the Rabbeinu Tam sees dores as being equal to the other three. They're synonymous. So two ways to figure out whether the bird is dores or not. That means dores is the only thing that matters. And the question is, how do I figure out if it's dores or not dores? Either I figure out if it is a dores or not a dores, or I find these three features. If I find these three features, I know it's not dores. And therefore it gives me that information. And then that would be, again, in consonance with many of the Rishonim, like the Ramban al Torah, who explained that the major feature of the kosher birds versus the non-kosher birds is whether they are birds of prey or whether they are birds that are the prey, that they are victims or are they the aggressors in these situations. And so we eat those that are the victims, meaning those are the foods that are kosher. The ones that are the aggressors and they attack the other birds, those are the ones that we don't eat. And that would make dores as the single feature that really matters. And these other three features are indications or symptomatic of birds that are not dores. And that's why, again, we described here that birds of prey also have a crop. They also have a gizzard, but they function differently. And that's why those are indications of these are not birds that are dores. So then, Tosafot then goes on to explain or try to narrow down what are the different features that are found in the birds. And that is because the Gemara now is going to identify for us in the Tameh birds that they have different numbers of Tahor features. They're not only one that has none of the Tahor features is the Nesher. The Nesher has zero Tahor features. The other birds that are enumerated in the list have some of those features. And what the Baal Tosafot is trying to do logically is narrow down what are those features that are found. And obviously for him, Dores can't be one of those features. Because if Al Korcha Chad Minayu Enu Dores, of course, one of those features has to be that it's not dores. Because if it's dores, then you're done before you start. So he says it has to be one of the kosher features found in these birds that we're going to speak about has to be enu dores. Because he says, if they have those other features, imkain enum dorsim. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, by definition, they would not be dorsim if they had the other three features. So the three features they must have must not be those three features. It must be enu dores plus two of the features. The Tosafot just makes that point based on the Rabbeinu Tam. And then he, by process of elimination, he tries to narrow or scope of what the Simanei Tahara are, and whether you could get one Siman Tahara, they would be like a super Tahara Siman. In that, Doreis automatically disqualifies you. And three Simanei Tahara make you Tahor, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Is there one Siman Tahara that could actually give you all the information? That's what the Baal Tosfot are trying to narrow down based on the way that the Gemara lays out over here. What's interesting over here, and I think you raised this question before, how do the Rabbana know this information? How do they know that every oath that is Doreis is Tameh? How do they have information like this that we can be certain that that is the distinction? So Tosafot here says the same line that the Gemara used before about Moshe Rabbeinu, B'chi Kanige Oblisteri Hayu? Were they hunters? Were they fowlers? Meaning, how do they know this information? So he speculates at first, V'ya Lachal Moshe Misinayu, if it is Lachal Moshe Misinay, Im Kein Lamali Dichtov Rachmana, Peres Vozneya, Tervayu Lo Dichtov, Otosh Doreis, Tremanov Shach, Chaminayu Doreis. Tosafot later on will, through process of elimination, say one of those two is a Doreis. And we know that a Doreis is problematic, Aloch Moshe Misinai, I don't need you to write that bird. We would have had that information. The Yesh Lomar, so Tosafot comes up with an interesting compromise. It can't be Midrabanan, because we're saying it's in the Torah. It can't be Aloch Moshe Misinai, because then you wouldn't need to enumerate some of the birds that are found there. So he has to come up with a Misora that's not Aloch Moshe Misinai, but also isn't something where we discovered it all of a sudden later on. And he says the following, Yesh Lomar, the Shema Kabbalah Haitam Yimot Noach, that they had a Mesora from Noach, she agreed Mikol Of Tahor. Because when he came out of the Teva, he brought in from the Of Tahor, he brought in seven. Whereas when he brought in from the Of Tameh, he only brought in two. And the reason being that he brought Korbanot. So he could identify all the birds that were Sheirim. Ubadaket Kulamu Masada Dorot. And he sent the Mesora down through the Dorot. So Tosafot comes up with a pretty novel way to explain this Mesora, that the Mesora is coming from Noach. So it's not Malach Namush Misinai, which is a foolproof Mesora, but it's also not Midrabanan, but it is a Mesora that was passed down generation to generation from Noach, and therefore the Torah enumerates them, and then through that we can identify what are the features, as well as this idea that Doreis Tameh, that any bird that's a bird of prey, by definition is Tameh, because Noach gave us that Mesora, that no bird that was Kashir when he came off the Teva was Doreis. So it gives us a certain amount of information that helps us down in the generations. It's an interesting note in the Baal HaTosafot. Now, based on these features, it says here, the problem that we have is that the Mishnah told us none of the Simanim are written in the Torah. The Gemara says, yes, they are, because you have a Nesher and a Tor. Tor is Kasher, Nesher is not Kasher, and if you contrast the two, you'll come up with the Simanim that you need. So the Simanim are indicated through the Torah. So Abaye's answer to that problem is, Amar Abaye, Lo ne'amar peirushan mitivrei Torah, ela mitivrei sofrim. The Torah never spells out the simanim. The Rabbonan came along and did this compare and contrast versus the Torim and the Nesher, and they're the ones who came up with them. As Rashi says over here, lo nitparshu simanim mamash b'Torah. They're not literally written out of the Torah. Ela midemana Torim b'Torim, since the Torim are Tahor, v'ani itnu b'hu, and it has all of these. Umana Nesher Bitzmeim. And then it enumerates the Nesher and the birds that are not. Uba Arba Simanim Elalu Hein Chalukim. These four features are distinct between these birds. Shmamina Hein Hein Simanei Tara. Those must be the Simanei Tara. So it's by process of elimination that they get to this answer of what the Simanim are. So again, it's in the Torah, but not explicit in the Torah. And the Divrei Sofrim means the Rabbanan then identified for us what are the common features that make the Nesher Tamei and make the Tor Tahor. And through that, they came to these four features. Now, Tani Rabbi Chia, Ofa Babi Siman Echad Tahor, the Fish Enu Dome LeNesher. If we have a bird that comes for us with one Siman Tahor, it's not Dome LeNesher. So Nesher Delet Leka Hu Klal Hu Delot Echol. What I would have then said is, the Nesher, which has no features that are Tahor, so that's why it's Tamei. Ha'ika Deet Lechad Techol. If you have one feature that's Tahor, then you'd be able to eat it. So that's based on the diok that you would have made, the inference you would have made from the Nesher. Nesher has zero of the features. So therefore, if you have one feature, that should make it enough that you'd be able to eat it. Where it says, what about the other way around? Ve'elef mitorin. Why don't you learn it from the kosher birds? Matorim dika kulu arba. So just like the torim have all four features that make them kasher. Avakanami adika kulu arba. So then you should also have all four features, which is what I noted to you before, that we have the two extremes, which is the Nesher has none, the Tor has all of them, What about in between? How do you know which direction to go? And that's exactly what the Gemara is asking. Which is the Dafka and which is the Lav Dafka? Is it the Nesher that's Dafka and the Torimer Lav Dafka, or is it vice versa? The Torimer Dafka and the Nesher is Lav Dafka, and that will determine whether you need four features to be kasher or just one feature to be kasher. So, Im Kein, Sharafot Tmeim, Dichtiv Rachmana, Lomeli. So, Bar Gemara says, then why did the Torah have to enumerate all the other non-kosher birds? It enumerates Nesher. Once I have Nesher, I should have all the information that I need. V'nelif minayu. So now, let's learn from them. Mahatam tlata v'lo achlinan. Over there, you have some of them that have three features that are ksherim, and we don't eat them. So you see that three features is not enough. Avko tlata v'lo nechol. So too, anything that has three kosher features should not be sufficient, because you have a huge list of birds. There are 24 non-kosher birds that are enumerated over there. And we'll see that there are a number of exceptions to the rule over here. But at least 19-20 of them have three kosher features to them. And Rashi says they share the same kosher features. V'choshekein, trei, v'chad. And of course, if they have two or one, then you're not going to have to tell me that they are not kosher, because when they have three, you're not allowed to eat them. So imkein, orev, dikhtiv, rachmana, lamale. So here the Gemara has a Mesorah that an orev only has two kosher features, not three kosher features. If you're already telling me birds with three kosher features are problematic, then why do you have to tell me about the orev that only has two kosher features? Ashtadit le tlata lo achlinan. Those birds that have three kosher features we don't eat. Dit le trei mi bai. Something that only has two kosher features, why do you have to enumerate it in the Torah? So that's the question of orev. Now, which two features the orev has is, again, subject to a machloket. The Balei Tosafot over here versus the Ramban. Ramban has two different versions. Only common denominator between all three of them is Etzba Yitera. That's one feature that the Orev does have, is an Etzba Yitera. The other three opinions have the other three features as being the possibility of what the second feature is that the Orev has. So Etzba Yitera is definitely it, according to these Rishonim. What the other feature is subject to that machloket. But the Orev has two. And if it has two, then why do you need to enumerate the orev if already three is disqualified? So the Gemara says, "Veleilef me'orev." So then, let's learn from orev what the minimum standard is. Ma'atam trei. So just like over there, your two kosher features was not enough. Av kol trei lo. So too, two kosher features would not be enough, and therefore you would have to have at least a minimum of three kosher features in order to be kosher. The Gemara says, "Im kein peres vo'oznia dichtav rachmana lamali." Then why do you need the Peres and Oznia? Once again, the Gemara thinks here that the Peres and Oznia only have one kosher feature. The Peres is something along the, either the bearded vulture or the gyre eagle. And the Oznia is possibly an osprey or a sea eagle. What we know is that both of them do not live in the inhabited areas. They're not common amongst the inhabited areas or where there is civilization. Because the Gemara is going to say that you don't have to worry about the Peres and Oznia, because we don't find them in our areas where we live. They just don't hang out there. But also, seemingly a common denominator between them is that they are by bodies of water. So that means the common features. I gave you what the possible definitions of what Peres and Oznia is. So then why, if from the Orev you can learn that two features would not be enough, but three would, then why does the Torah have to write the Peres and Oznia? Why does it have to write that one feature is not good enough? So, ha-shadid le-trei lo-achlinat. If it has two kosher features, we don't eat it. Did le-chad mi-boi. So then if it has one kosher feature, you need to tell me that you can't eat it. V'nigmar mi-peres vozniya. So that's learned from peres vozniya to tell you that even one feature is not sufficient. Nigmar says, imkei nesher dikhtav rachmano lomali. Then why bother writing the nesher? The nesher has no features. If something with one feature already is disqualified, why do I need the nesher that has none of the features? If you don't need it, then something that has none of those features, you have to tell me. Ella. So then, what do you see from this? You see, in the list of non-kosher birds, you see birds with three features, you see birds with two features, bird with one feature, and then a bird with no features. What you learn from that is, as the nesher, the let lekal hu de lo teko, that the only thing that is disqualifying is when you have none of the features. If you have four tamei features, then you're tamei. Hadid lechad, if you have one kosher feature, you can eat it, achol. What it's telling you is that all birds that have a single kosher feature are ksherim. Then what's the list in the Torah doing? The list in the Torah is telling you, these birds would have been kosher based on these features. Had you not had this list, you would have assumed these birds are fine. The reason these birds are disqualified is because the Torah enumerates them, even though they have kosher features. So it's an exhaustive list of the Tamei birds, because, and the Gemara says this, about the reasons why the Torah enumerated either the kosher or the non-kosher, is whichever was greater in number. So if there are more kosher birds, then the Torah went out of its way to explain to you which are the non-kosher birds. If there are more kosher animals, then the Torah will go out of its way to explain to you what are the non-kosher animals. So over here, the number of birds that are kasherim are far more extensive. They're a larger number. And anything with one feature would be kasher. So that means that all the birds that are enumerated here, if we didn't have them enumerated, would have been kasherim. So these are the exceptions to the list, and that's why the Torah enumerates these 24 birds to tell us that these birds are not kasherim. So now you have the nesher, which has none. You have the paras vozniyah that have one feature each. You have the orev that has two features, that's four of the birds. The remaining 20 birds are birds that have three features to them. And the way Rashi explains it means that they have three features in common. They have the same three features, and the Bali Tosafot read it this way as well. The Torah wrote the Nesher. Halav Ochi, had it not been for the Nesher, Avamino leilef mi peres vozniyah. I want to learn from Paris Vosnia that one kosher feature is not good enough because the Paris Vosnia have one kosher feature and they are tzmeim. They're no good to eat. So how about Paris Vosnia shnek tuvim abayim kechad? Aren't they Paris Vosnia two psukim that teach you the same thing? Shnek tuvim abayim kechad, eim lamdim. And when you have two psukim telling you the same thing, then they're not teaching. We've discussed this numerous times, which is that when the Torah gives you a law or gives you an example, it is a paradigm. So if it tells you information, it will tell you that information once and use that as a paradigm for everything else. If it wanted to teach you that the Paris or the Ozniyah, something with one feature that's kasher is still problematic, it could have written one of the two and that would have been sufficient and you would have known that information. You would have extrapolated that information. It would have been a binyanav. It would have been a paradigmatic example and then you would have learned from it. When the Torah already gives you two examples, it's coming to teach you that that's the exception to the rule and not the rule anymore. Because if it wanted to give you a rule, it would have written one. The fact that it wrote two of them shows you these are the exceptions to the rule, not the rule itself. So if that's the case, and they wrote Paris Vosniyah, they wrote both of them, you wouldn't have been able to extrapolate from them. The Gemara made an assumption. If you know Paris Vosniyah, you can now extrapolate from them to say that anything with one kosher feature is no good. How could you extrapolate from them? There are two psukim telling you the same information, makes them the exception to the rule, and not the rule. And actually that rule would teach you that anything with one siman kasher actually would be fine, not problematic. Mar says, Gemire, we have a mesora. Again, this goes back to what Tosafot was speaking about before. We have a mesora. Dika bahai, leka bahai, dika bahai, leka bahai. They don't share the same common feature. Whatever the Paris or the Ozniyah have, that one feature that each of them has is not a common feature. It's a different feature. And since they each have a unique feature, we need both of them. And they're no longer shnek tovim abayim kechad. And therefore you can learn from them. Even one siman tara would have been problematic. And then you wouldn't have needed nesher, which has no siman tara. Michte. So let's take a look at this. Let's understand this better. Esrim v'arba ofot meim habu. There are 24 that are enumerated there. Iyavshar dechad ikibahanach lekibahani. How is it possible that one of the features that's found in them is not found in the other ones? If that's the case, then it's shnek tuvim abayim kechad, which means even that the 20 that we had before, those 20 birds that share three common features, they have overlapping features. If they have overlapping features, then it's shnek tuvim abayim kechad. You couldn't have extrapolated from them. This whole logic that we just built to teach us that any kosher feature is sufficient is built on a premise that you could have extrapolated the din from each one of them along the way. Had I known just the birds that were enumerated had three kosher features, I would have said everything with three kosher features is no good. Okay, then what do you need the orev for? Oh, the orev is, so anything with two kosher features is no good. And then went to Paris and I said, yeah, one kosher feature. In all these cases, how do you learn from them? The other birds that have three features and that are kosher, they have to have overlap between them. And so then even the feature by the Paris and the Ozniyah is duplicated in the other birds. And if that's the case, if they have overlap between them, they're shnek tuvim bayim kechad. How can you extrapolate from them? Gemiri, this is the mesor we have. Esrim v'arba ofot meim abu, v'arba'a simanim. And they are four simanim. Plato hadre bekulu. Three of them are found in all of them. Esrim mehem shlosha shlosha. Those 20 have, again for Rashi, means the same three features. Those three features that appear in all of them, that is the same three features we're talking about here. Utrebe Orev, two of them are appearing in Orev, Chad Be'er Peres, V'chad Be'ozniah, one of the Peres and the Ozniah, Itabaha, Letabaha, and the Peres Ozniah, whichever one the one has, the other one doesn't have, which means that that's the one distinct feature that's different than all the other birds that have that feature. So that's the way Rashi learns it. So then it turns out, in the Peres and Ozniah, one of the two of them has the feature that's not found in all the other birds that are there, which is the way Rashi explains it. Rashi explains you have birds with three kosher features, you have the Orev with two kosher features, and then you have Peres Ozniah with one kosher feature. One of those two has the same kosher feature found in the other birds. One of them has a feature that's not found in any of the other birds, because that makes it distinct or unique. It's got to have that one feature that's left out in the other birds. Meaning the other birds that have three, this has got to be the feature that's left out.
So we explained the Gemara according to Rashi, but there is another alternate shot that is brought by the Baal Amor in the Maor HaGadol on the Daf Arif on Daf Kof Amud Bet, where he brings from one of the Chachmei Provence, his name is Rav Moshe Bar Yosef, who gives the explanation that the Ramban favors heavily, which is Tata Hadri Bekulo means, and his explanation of Shlosha here doesn't mean that each of the birds has three, but that Shlosha Hadri Bekulo means that three features find themselves amongst these birds. It doesn't mean that these birds have all three of these features. It just means that these birds, amongst them, all have these features. And those three features are the Etzbi Yitera, the Zephik, and the Kurkubano Nikla. In all these birds, at least one of these features is found there. Not all three of them. Rashi means it as being all three. But it says from Moshe Bar Yosef, who says that it means that these three features, at least one of them appears in all of these birds. And multiples of these birds have that same feature. Peres Ozniah, that both have one feature each. One of them has the feature that's not found in all the other birds. That means that Enu Dores is the feature that's found in the one, either the Peres or the Ozniah, as being an exceptional feature. The reason to say that is, first of all, it helps the Gemara flow a little better based on what we're saying now. It also, from reality standpoint, they don't find that the birds that are enumerated in the Torah have all three features, the way the Rashi says. And therefore, when he says Shlosha Hadrei Bekulo, it doesn't mean that each one of them has all three features. It just means they share amongst them these three features. And all of them have one of those features, but just not that they all have all three features. Of course, with the exception of the Orev that has two features, and then the Peres Ozniah that have one feature each similar to those other birds, but one of those two has the feature that it is Enu Dores.
And we'll discuss this opinion more in detail tomorrow, and the benefits of this opinion in the conclusion of the Gemara. So now, what I would have thought, Leilif Minei, so that we'd have thought then learn from those birds that none of these work, not with three features, not with two features, not with one feature does it work, because they're all Tamei, even though they have those features. Because as Rashi notes over here, had we known which that feature was, that was only in the Peres Ozniah, then we would be able to know. As long as you had one of the other features of Tara, then we know that the bird is Tahor, if it had one of those Simanim. Because I would have then said that any bird that comes here with one Siman Tara should be problematic, because I don't know which Siman Tara is uniquely associated either with the Peres Ozniah. So then I would have thought that's the only way to have a kosher bird is to have all four features. So that's what comes along. Kotov Rachman and Nesher. That's why the Torah wrote the Nesher. Neshner the late klal hu delo tekol. The Nesher that has none of these features you're not allowed to eat. Haika, de'it le'chad, achol. That means that there are those that have one feature that you eat. So that's what the Nesher comes along to dispel and say that one Siman Tara is sufficient as long as it's not a Peres Ozniah. Ela tori dichtiv rachman alamali. Then once you've gotten to that point, if you only need one feature to be kosher, then why do you got to mention the Torim, which have four features? What's the whole point of having the Torim? Amar Rav Ukva Bar Chama b'korban. It comes to teach you that that is ro'oi l'korban. So that, yes, in order to be kosher to eat l'hajot, you need one kosher feature. That's enough. But in order to be ro'oi l'korban, you need all four features, plus you need to be a Torah b'nei Yonah. So the reason the Torah mentions the Torah is not because of the feature aspect of it, but rather because of the korban aspect of it. Rashi over here says that the point of the Torim, Tana, brought down, is not because they're found in the Torah. Ela simana ba'alma urilan. The reason it mentions the Torah is to give us an indication. It's not a din that you have to have all four features, but simply an indication. Elu hein simanei tara. Otao she'anesher v'atorin chalukim ben. It is this distinction between the Torah and the Nesher that still gives us that information about the four simanei tara. But that's not the reason the Torah is okay. The reason the Torah is mentioned in the Torah is for the purpose of a korban.
Tosafot back on the Yom HaRauf then says, if that's the case, then you do need Torim to be written down, not just because of korban, but also for the fact that it teaches us the four simanim.
So the way that the Balei Tosafot formulated is,
the Gemara here has a havamina that the word Torim appears somewhere in the Torah that's extraneous, which means that it would have taught us about the din of the Simanei Tahara. And if that's the case, why do I need that given the information I have now? And so the Gemara answers that even though the word Torim is repeated numerous times, we need it every time for Korban. And the Simanei Tahara are just learnt out from the fact that Torim are the birds that are picked for Korban, but not because there's an extraneous Torim that's written there. So the Simanei Tahara are not coming from the word Torim. And they're also not something that's explicit midivrei Torah. It's perusham midivrei sofrim, by the fact that it was the chosen bird to be the one that is kasher. That contrast is what gives us that information. All right, we're going to stop here on the last line of Samach Aleph Amud Bet.